Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Welcome to the Mike O'Mara Show. You know, when you do this every single day, I think every time you come in here and do what we do after something horrible has happened, you, in a way, say to yourself, well, we're never going to probably have to do this again.
Right.
You know, disasters that have happened during my pretty close to four decades of doing a show in one form or the other. We've always been able to stop and pause. We're going to stop and pause today. We're not going to do a normal thing for you today because it just is not natural. It doesn't feel right. But unlike other shows where we've talked about a disaster affecting the national consciousness, this feels different. It felt different when I heard the news about Texas yesterday, and it feels different now. It's funny because Oscar and I used to have discussions on whether I get activist when it comes to doing this program. It chases people away. People don't like to hear us talk about bad things because they think we're here trying to entertain you. But sometimes it's just necessary to, for the purpose of venting, for the purpose of gathering information, for the purpose of just talking about how we're all feeling the day after another in the endless series of mass shootings. I was born and raised about 35 to 40 minutes from Newtown, Connecticut, where the last time we had babies massacred. It was 2012. I remember feeling after that, after the anger passed and after the dust settled on that tragedy, I remember saying, well, this is it. This is it. We're gonna figure it out now. We're going to figure it out now. And we never did. We never have. And unfortunately, at least the first post that I put about this online yesterday, I felt as though we never will. But then as I started thinking about coming in and doing this show, I said to myself, you can't stop caring. You can't stop involving yourself in this type of stuff in any way you can. Because if you do, you know, what are we here for? So today, on the anniversary of this tragic shooting in Texas, where 21 children and a couple of teachers lost their lives, we're gonna be just having a roundtable to vent, to come up with some kind of solutions. We had already booked Reed Galen from the Lincoln Project on the show, and we're happy to have him with us. Reed, thanks so much for joining us today. And if you don't know about the Lincoln Project, Reed's an independent political strategist. He formed the Lincoln Project because a group of guys and gals were frustrated with the way things were, the status quo in politics, and arguably they moved the meter. They moved the meter and they got things done. And you know the ins and outs of how things work in Washington, D.C. and out on the political trail. And whether you like it or not, whether you want to talk about it or not, that is a key component of where we are. The strange thing that happened is yesterday, before all this news hit, it actually was it was in the middle of what we were doing, and then I found out all the news later on. We were confirming that Reed was going to come on the show, and for some reason, I said to myself, "Well, you know, I kind of think it's going to be good that we have you here because I think we're going to have something serious to discuss." I had no way thought it was going to be something of this magnitude. So Reed is here if you're interested. It's lincolnproject.us. And you can find out more about the Lincoln Project, and you can listen to their podcast, which Oscar's been a part of, and done a great job with the Lincoln Project. So, Reed, once again, thank you. Thank you for being here on what I've, you know, chosen to make as an hour and a half of this discussion about something I guess in my own mind I didn't think would ever happen again.
Well, you never want. Well, first and foremost, Mike, thank you for having me. And second is, you don't want to think it could happen again. I think that that's probably part of our collective problem in that to think that if you kept yourself so vigilant and attuned to the idea that this could happen on any given day, in any given state, at any given school, you'd be exhausted. And I think there's a natural defense mechanism, not only individually, but collectively, that says, well, you know, it happened again. Let us pray that it doesn't happen again. And then it happens again. And we sort of go back into that. I think it's partly defensive. And I think it's partly apathy, which is, if I care too much, you know, knowing that this is going to continue to happen, what will I do? And I think that there's so many of us, and I don't think it's an unnatural reaction. So I don't look down on anybody for it. It's like, I can't handle it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear it. You know, I just want to hug my kids. I mean, Mike, you send Michael to school every day. I send my girls to school every day. I hugged them extra tight last night. You just want to hope to God that it doesn't happen. And then you know, I don't know if you've talked to Michael about this, but I don't know, a couple of months ago, they had a false shooter drill at my girls' school. Some guy pressed the wrong button and they came home and they're like, yeah, we locked the doors. We turned the lights out. Like they were so nonchalant about it. It was more upsetting than I would have imagined.
We had a drop off this morning at about 5 or 7. I was in line with all the other parents and it felt different. Mm-hmm. I found myself the way I drop off at my son's elementary school is there's a line of cars that queue up early and they open the doors of the school and the
teachers. So are you the Michael Keaton or you're doing it wrong?
I do it correctly. I don't do Uncle Buck. I don't do Michael Keaton. And the teachers come out and we stay in the queue. We were in early today, right. And then the. It starts moving about 7:25, and I found myself looking at the faces of the teachers. They stand about every 12 feet as the kids are being dropped off. And, you know, I was waving at my son, and then I was just looking at the faces, and I wanted to put my hand over my heart and just say, hey, we're thinking of you. We're, you know, you can't do that when you're in the queue, but being a parent, as you mentioned, I did talk to Michael about it. I talked to Michael about it this morning. It's, you know, the news is on 24/7 around the house. I'm a news junkie and I was just very straight ahead with him. He knew. He's smart. He's a smart 8-year-old. He knows what's going on. And it's stunning that we have experience with this in America. We had Sandy Hook. We had Newtown. So now we can handle it or can we? It's just,
it's
I don't know.
Coping
I mean,
more than handling.
It's coping more than, I felt, I take it really, I try not to take it the wrong way in front of my loved ones. I just, you know, to sit there, you want to just sit there and, disappear. I don't know. It just felt that this one was, I was angry, but at the same time, I wanted to say, you know, we'll never. I'm embarrassed to be an American. I'm embarrassed to be part of this country where this happens and nothing changes. And I posted something to that effect. But then when I started thinking about it, I said, no, we don't quit. You don't. We've got to somehow figure this out. And we're monopolizing the conversation. But I don't know what, Rob, you're a parent. Oscar, you know, you are a devoted uncle to your to those kids. How do you guys feel when this happened? That's the first thing I wanted to do. I wanted to get that off our chests and get the emotion of the moment. Because how we feel is a lot like probably how the country is feeling.
I hate the fact that when I found out about it, somehow I wasn't surprised. I said, well, it's happened again.
And we've heard a lot of that.
Yeah. I mean, and if, you know, Reed mentioned coping, but also a numbness because I mean, how many days ago was it? Buffalo? It was not that long ago. It was a week or so ago and it happened again. And then, you start to watch the coverage and you put yourself in the place of the parents of those children. You put yourself in the place of those children that watched all of this and experienced all this go down. And it made me revisit. Now, both my kids are out of the house. Robert's mostly out of the house. Julia's in Italy right now, so I don't have them right now. But it made me revisit something that's a realization you get as a parent that is the most horrifying thing is when they get to a point where you can't fix it. If they're little, and they fall down and skin their knee, you put a Band-Aid on it, you kiss them, you tell them it's going to be okay, and you fixed it. But when they get to an age when they're going off to school and you have to let go like that, and if something like this goes down and it's totally out of your control, there's nothing wrong with it being out of your control because it's the system. Kids need to go to school. But I can't imagine being those parents that turned loose one last time and they don't get that back. And it's because you have to... It's part of the growing up process. You have to cede control to someone else or the kid itself. And it's, I can't wrap my head around it, how bad that must feel and how haunting that must be.
For go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm going to cut you off, Mike.
That's right. I was just going to set something up, but it's not important. Go ahead.
Look, I don't think you have to have kids to understand.
No.
And have the ability to try to comprehend the idea that a family member has to take a DNA swab to figure out if their child has been murdered because the amount of destruction to a second, a third, and a fourth grader's body that was caused is so uncomprehensible that they don't know if it's their kid. So I'm angry. I'm angry, not because we continue to hear about this, but I'm angry that these little kids can't go to school and learn and do what we tell everybody to do. To be good little kids, you know, that what your parents want you to do, that's the safe place.
Mm-hmm.
And people are allowed to this day to walk in when they turn 18 and say, you got the cash, you got the credit, go ahead.
You know, Mike, Rob and I, just a weird twist of fate, happen to have gone to the same elementary and junior high schools.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and you're, I think, 3-4 years apart, but... you know, it's one of those things. They said that Generation X, our generation, is the last generation that grew up without this. And yeah. I can't imagine sitting in Miss Williams' fourth grade class or Mr. Stark's seventh grade math class and having to think that this was a reality. I don't know that I could have understood it. Right? Yeah. It just wasn't something that was even in our minds. And to Oscar's point, now our kids go to school. Like, it is a consciousness. It's a conscious thing. You know, they probably don't think about it every day, again, because that would make you crazy. But it's not a surprise when they hear about it. Now, just let me tell you, Mike, I failed my kids this morning. I was driving them to the bus. They hadn't heard about it. We had turned the news off. And I said, I should tell them. And I dropped them off at the bus, and I hadn't told them.
How old are your kids?
Almost 10 and almost 12.
Okay.
And then, of course, they, you know, got brought up at school today, and I think they'll be fine. But, like, I failed because I couldn't handle it, right? Because I was like, is this the thing I want to start their day on? And, you know, and I should have, and I'm disappointed in myself.
I think it's tougher.
Sometimes
I think it's easier for me. I think it's easier for me with an 8-year-old. I actually do. I mean, I don't know. I somehow feel at that age, right. You know, they're little tiny adults, really,
right.
You know,
believe
12
me.
Year olds,
believe
but boy,
me.
I just think that when I was, before Oscar told us what he wanted to tell us, and I feel your emotion coming through, Oscar. I wanted to set up what I'd like to kind of do during the show today. This is as I said, what I'd like to talk about today, as well as our feelings and how we feel, echoing the sentiments of everybody. I've asked for a thread on Facebook. I did this last night where I asked for people to just give us ideas to bandy about here and see if we could come up with anything or what can be done or if anything can be done. We're going to do that. We're going to talk about this, what I call the sideshows that have been going on with this. And when I say sideshows, I don't necessarily mean it in a derogatory way. I mean that other things happening in the periphery of this. Example of Beto O'Rourke going into a press conference, a presser yesterday with Governor Abbott and Senator Cruz, and all the media coverage and the way it's all always done. And, you know, because there's an element there, I think, that has to be looked at in a mm-hmm. different way. It has to be all hands on deck. And then at a certain point on the show, later on in the broadcast here, I'd like to talk about out-of-the-box thinking. And I've been bandying this about in my brain all the time. I've gone from one extreme to the other when it comes to thinking about this tragedy. So I'll have some thoughts on where that is, and then we'll get to your listener comments. Hopefully, there are a decent amount of them on the thread, and that's what we're gonna try to do today. So getting back to the way we all feel about it. It's just of all the shootings that have occurred, Newtown Sandy Hook has stayed with me for a long time. There's that, you know, next to Parkland, as far as from my frame of reference, those parents have organized in such a way that they have found mission and purpose through their tragedy. You know, the question is about that mission and purpose, and I'll ask you about this, Reed. All of these organizations, all of these fundraising efforts, all of these lobbying organizations that try to talk to these legislators and try to move the meter, I feel that's where I think my greatest amount of futility is felt, where I look at that and I'm just... Here's another Everytown USA. There's another email that I got. Okay, you know, and here's another shooting. It's tough to fight that, especially when you're running an organization like that, isn't it?
Yeah, and so, you know, there's someone down in Florida, Mike, a guy named Fred Guttenberg, whose daughter was killed mm-hmm. at Parkland. And Fred is an amazing guy. You're never going to find somebody more passionate. And I think for guys like Fred and the folks from Everytown and Moms Demand, you know, it is one of those things where it can feel like getting up in the morning and seeing this again and saying, why do I do this? It doesn't matter anyway. But I think it's because, they know what it's like, and they're probably going to go to Uvalde and they're going to talk to these parents, because I don't think it's something so awful and singular. I don't think that there's anyone else. I mean, many people lose children and tragically. But this is one to Oscar's point, the place where they're supposed to be safe, the place mm-hmm. where they're supposed to be becoming, you know, young men and women, where they're supposed to be getting educated. It's so, I mean, when I use the word unique, that please understand, I'm not trying to make light of it, but Fred and those folks, like, they have to do this, because if they don't do it, it'll be worse if such a thing is possible. And so I'm glad that they're out there every day. And I'm sure that, you know, as futile as you feel, Mike, when you see the emails, I can't imagine what it is they feel like when they've been through that pain. They'll never get over it, right? There's a great Jason Isbell song, right? It gets easier, but it never gets easy, right? And that's how they probably live every day. These folks in Texas, their journey is beginning today. And I cannot, and it's something they'll never get over, right? I mean, those families are shattered. That community, 16,000 people in sort of Southwest Texas, like, that will wreck that community for generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and when you talk about Oscar, when I heard the emotion, and it's rare to hear that from you on a show that we do together. When you talk about Uvalde, Texas, and you talk about the Hispanic immigrant community, you're part of that community. And when you see something like that, I welcome your thoughts on it in general, but I would ask you specifically, do you worry that because it is a predominantly community of color, and I don't know the details of the victims, all of the victims, but I will assume that a good many of them were members of the Hispanic community here, and the shooter was a member of the Hispanic community. Do you worry that something like this is going to slip through the cracks faster, that this is going to go away quicker, that this will not stay in the national consciousness. What are your thoughts? How do you feel about the whole situation?
You hit the nail on the head. You see the community, you see the socioeconomic layout that's being reported. You can't help but feel when you see people on the news, parents weeping, families racing that look like you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't help but feel a little more. Not to say I didn't feel it when Sandy Hook happened, or I don't feel it when you hear about the shootings in Buffalo. But if you're asking me through my lens as Latinx, yes, you sit there. And this is beyond race when it comes down to it. But do I feel a different way? Yes, I feel a different way. But I can't get past, and this will be laid out within the show, that you just can't comprehend the level of hate it takes to do this to kids. You just don't. I don't know that evil exists at this level. And now it's become even clearer in the past few weeks.
It's horrible. And it affects all of us. And I don't. One of the other reasons I want to come in and do a show like this today is because I also think that, you know, if we were to come in and do our regular stuff, you have to take pause at least for a moment.
Of course.
And that's my way of in some way getting it out there and making people stop and pause. I don't feel like we're going to stop and pause this time. I feel like, you know, it's going to blow over like it always does. And I'll ask the political strategist, how do you keep this in the national consciousness and try to move the meter? Is that you can't control that, can you?
It's hard. I think you're right, because again, well, first of all, we have collective short-term memory loss. You know, everything lasts 15 minutes in this country. And I think, as Rob noted, the shooting in Buffalo was roughly a week ago. Remember, there was another school shooting up in Michigan, I don't know, a couple of months ago too. So this is, you know, it's become a routine occurrence, or at least a regular occurrence, or at least not an irregular occurrence. Mm. And so that's one. I think two is, you know, politically, you saw that, you know, most of the Republicans, when asked about this, will double down. They'll talk about how, you know, more school security is needed. The lieutenant governor of Texas says, you know, every school in Texas should only have one door. There shouldn't be windows. I mean, that sounds like a prison, not a school to me. And Democrats, you know, at the highest levels, have said, you know, this is an issue that voters will decide on in November, which is frustrating, very candidly, in its own right, because that says we're not willing to do anything. Now, I guess in that case, we shouldn't be surprised either, Mike, right? Because this is what happens, right? Republicans are going to roll over. They're going to turn it into the culture war. They will double and triple down on this, because that's what they do when there's a horrific occurrence that they have at least some purchase on responsibility of. And Democrats are, they're Democrats. Right. God love them. But, you know, pressure situations and crises are not often their best times, because they're calibrating everything on, you know, is it enough? Is it too much? As opposed to what's the right thing to do. And I think that we should just assume that, you know, there's not any action because we, the people, don't demand it. And if and when we finally do, something will happen. But there's got to be, you know, political consequence. There's got to be social consequence. There's got to be electoral consequence. And right now, look, you know, this weekend, these jerks are all going down to Texas. They're all going to Houston for the NRA convention, right? Mm-hmm. They're all going to speak there. They're going to do thoughts and prayers for 15 seconds at the top. And then they're going to do why the NRA is such a historic organization, despite its years and years of corruption and other bad acts. And then they're going to get back to why, you know, those people are coming for us. Or why it's your God-given right to defend, you know, your house against the government or whatever it is. And, you know, it'll be Memorial Day. And by 2 weeks from now, you know, something else horrible have happened.
And I hate to look at it as in an opportunistic way, but unfortunately, you have to, in order to move things forward or to effect any kind of change, you do have to strike while the iron's hot when it comes to this. I mean, you have to think in those terms to do it. I'm just not sure how to get there. But I'm also sure that I don't want to sit on my hands. That's why I came here to talk about this today. Yeah, Rob, go ahead.
I have a question, a political question for Reed. Mm-hmm. It seems like none of these shootings, as you said, in 2 weeks in the public consciousness and they're gone. But if you look at them each as a grain of sand, is there a cumulative effect in the political consciousness? Or, I mean, leave the social consciousness out of it. Because I don't know anyone who is not right now thinking that something needs to be done. But obviously, that's not the feeling in Washington, D.C. on the Hill. Is there a cumulative effect that this could build into something?
I would like to believe that there is. And if the sands are flowing through the hourglass, when that finally, we're going to mix our metaphors, when that finally decides to become something,
right?
It will be a surprise to all of us.
Right.
You know, just like, you know, it was yesterday, Mike, also was the 2-year anniversary of the murder of George Floyd. None of us knew, A, that was going to happen, but B, the outpouring of energy that was going to create across the country. And I will say this, I believe, as someone who was, you know, working very hard against Donald Trump at the time, that his reaction to it, I think, really did scare off a lot of otherwise decent white suburban voters who were like, I don't want anything to do with that guy. And so, you know, it did have an effect, Rob, on that. I think it could, but I think what it's going to take is for someone or people to keep it in the consciousness. Now, this is, you know, a lot of politics is not surprising. You know, you hear about polling and focus groups and blah, 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 blah. But like, that's not leading, that's following, right? So right now, there are pollsters busy all over this country, from one end to the other, from one state to congressional districts, everything else, trying to figure out where their candidate needs to be on this, right?
Right.
And, you know, background checks, 90% issue, right? It's a 90% issue.
It is.
And you can find any American, you can find 10% of any Americans to hate everything, like just a rule. Usually it's 25%, but 90% issue is basically unanimous because it's the ultimate reasonable man test. That makes sense. Why would you give an 18-year-old two AR-15s in body armor without, like, shouldn't the guy behind the counter being like, hey, pal, what are you going to do with all this?
Yeah.
Seems like a lot off, you know, awful lot of heavy gear here for like a Tuesday afternoon. And so I think that there needs to be collective action and collective energy. And a lot of folks like me, right, who are going to be the swing voting cohort, need to get off their rear ends. If this is the life we want our kids to live, then we'll sit and we'll, you know, play with our phones and ignore things. And if we want our kids to have a life not like this, then we'll actually get up and do something, whether or not that's working with, you know, these organizations, whether or not that's pressuring your members of Congress. Remember, just as an aside, if there's one thing an elected leader hates more than anything, it is actually getting phone calls from constituents. They hate it. It's like kryptonite to them. They hate it.
See, this is why you're here, baby. Like, this is why you're here. I'm so pleased.
So, like, you know, if you get 25 phone calls put into a member of a Congress's office, like, they lose their minds, right? Because they don't know what to do about it. Yeah,
I had no
because
idea.
They're so used to like doing whatever it is they want to do and getting, you know, and people ignoring it because folks got other things to do. So it is possible, but it takes energy. It takes dedication. And it takes, you know, on the first Tuesday in November, getting off your duff and actually pulling the lever for the person who you think can make a difference.
I'm glad you said that. It sets me up for what I'm going to say right now. I do so with my business manager, the gentleman in the blue blazer right there, sitting right in front of me.
Does he have a court date today or what's happening?
Because, I'm glad he's here.
I dress like
Reed,
an adult.
Because I thank you. You look good.
The jacket is covering a stain.
I have always walked the line, the fence, I should say, politically on this show. I've had my moments where I've been out of control, but I've always consistently had one issue that has been my number one issue, and it's always been about the epidemic of handgun and gun violence in the country. And I think sometimes you have to walk the walk. And I just like to put everybody that's listening to me right now on notice that we're not going to change the way we do this show. We're going to have fun. We're going to have more laughs than anybody has laughs. We're going to continue to nurture that. It's part of our DNA. It's what we do. But I'm also, for my last little trip to the rodeo, my swan song will be, we're going to have more people that are out there trying to change this culture on this show to talk about how they're doing it, how you can help them do it, and how you can elect people that are going to help them move the meter when it comes to this just stain on our nation. And I can sit here and do a one-off show, or I can come in here and say, I'd like to, as we go forward, talk to the people that are out there, talk to the Gutenbergs that are out there that are, you know, dealing with this on the front lines. And if that can help in some small way, when Reed just told me 25 phone calls in a congressional office is a big deal.
Well, you could do 25 voices. Right?
Yeah. Senator Jeff Goldblum is on hold on line 2.
Rob, I'm here to tell you the door is open now.
All right.
for people that want to come on periodically to talk about this issue and not let people forget. And this is something I should have done a long time ago. I love the fact that I will get an occasional email from people that say, hey, I was going through a tough time. My father was dying, right, and I listened to you guys. You're the only thing that could be. I love that. It gives me a great deal of satisfaction. But it will give me a great deal of satisfaction to know that at least on one particular issue, and in this particular circumstance that we're talking about today, the idea of babies being murdered by an assault rifle, I can do at least my bit to keep it in the national consciousness and keep it in the minds of our listeners. If you got a problem with that, you know, pound sand. I don't need you. That's okay. You know, move on. It's a tiny little engine that we run anyway here. And if you said, oh, you're just supposed to be funny, you know, I'm sorry, but with the most just heartfelt sense of respect for you as a listener, F off.
Yeah.
Okay. I truly want to do something,
Mike,
a little bit.
And this is a callback to yesterday, that tape I played of Cardi B. If you have a platform, if you have an opportunity to reach out to 80, 100, 120,000 people on a daily basis and say, hey, this is something you got to think about. And more importantly, this is something we can't forget.
There's a caveat because as well as doing this, I have to do my own research. I have to do my own research and make sure that if we're going to direct our listenership to someplace, I want to make sure that we're doing it the right way and that we're doing it in a thoughtful way and that we vet any organization that we're going to put up on our website, that we do it the right way. There's some work to be done on that end. I think we're all capable of doing it and we'll move forward. But you got to walk the walk if you're going to talk the talk. And if I'm going to sit here and do a show about solutions and what we can do, who knows what little I would do. But I love to hear he's right when Reed tells us about making the phone ring in a congressional office.
Yeah.
It does. What do you think those people that are lobbyists do? We're up on a break already here. We have to take
Mike,
a short
we're
break.
We're not going to do a promo here because I just don't feel it's right for the mood of the program.
Okay.
So we'll come back with music after this.
Thank you, Rob. We'll come back. And when we come back, we're going to talk about, is there any way that we can change the way business is done in this country? We happen to be blessed with a guy that has dramatically changed the way he did his business. That's Reed Galen, and we'll talk more about how we can solve some problems right here. Might have told me that before we started the show, Rob, but let me do that right now. Mellower Vibes are just a drop or a toke away with Dadgrass. Good day for that. Dadgrass will take you back. Just sit back, light up, and chill out the old-fashioned way. Sweet dreams are made of CBD. Dadgrass is legal, organic, smokable hemp that relaxes your body and mellows your mind. Their 100% organic pre-rolled joints are very low in THC and high in CBD. So you can enjoy the effects of CBD while keeping a clear head. And if you want a toke without the smoke, Dadgrass also has a CBD tincture made with the same high-quality hemp. It's easy to dose and the effects come on smooth. Chill out without getting stoned. And now, all things must grass. Celebrate a classic bloke. That is right. I didn't read that incorrectly, right?
No, that's
all
exactly
things
right.
Must grass. That's their...
His album was All Things Must Pass. George Harrison's okay. Greatest album.
Thank you. All Things Must Grass. Mm-hmm. Celebrate a classic bloke with a classic toke with special edition George Harrison pre-roll joints or merch.
The merch
like
is
merchandise?
Great. Yeah, it's great. It's
did
so
you
cool.
Shorten that, or did the sponsor shorten that?
Mike, merch is the hip way to say merchandise.
Great for any Beatles fan who needs to chill. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All Dadgrass products are federally legal for ages 18 and over, and it ships right to your door anywhere in the U.S. Right now, Dadgrass offering TMOS listeners 20% off your first order when you go to dadgrass.com/TMOS. Go to dadgrass.com/TMOS for 20% off your first order. Remember, Matt, dadgrass.com/TMOS. All right, welcome back to the show, and we're here with Reed Galen from the Lincoln Project, and we're talking about the tragedy in Uvalde, Texas yesterday with 21 people, two adults and 19 children murdered for no apparent reason. We don't have the answers yet. We don't have the shooter either. He was killed by police at the end of this tragic day. The strange thing right before we came to tape here is that the grandmother of this maniac was critically injured, but she's still alive, at least as of taping now. I don't know what the prognosis is for her, but I think she made the 911 call that resulted in police being at the school when this went down. And I'm with some of the journalists that were speaking to the police chief when he was saying, there were people at the scene, but it was a barricade situation, and officers were, taking fire. So it's just amazing. Before we get to the solutions part of this, I wanted to share this from Stephen McGraw, director of the Texas Department of Public Safety. He detailed how the gunman responsible for the mass shooting at Robb Elementary School obtained his guns and ammunition. The 18-year-old identified as Salvador Ramos by officials was a dropout of the Uvalde High School, and authorities have not found a criminal history, so there's no record on this guy, so far at least.
Mm-hmm.
The gunman lived with his 66-year-old grandmother, so it's a different home situation. We don't know the details as of yet. On March 17th, Ramos purchased a semi-automatic rifle at a local sporting goods store. Then on March 18th, he purchased 375 rounds of ammunition for that rifle. On March 20th, he purchased another semi-automatic rifle at this same local store. And that, of course, is according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. So we're back to talk about any way that we can change the business and the way it's done in this country, if not through government. I want to get back to what you said, Reed, about making the phones ring in a congressional office. And from where I sit and from where I look at it, it seems to me that that giant building out off of Route 66 in Fairfax, Virginia, known as the National Rifle Association, the power of the purse that they wield when it comes to backing, supporting, donating to these campaigns, I see it as almost insurmountable. And I think the proof is in the voting records, with 90% of the American people for universal background checks, but nobody moves on the Hill. Where do you see that? Any chance of any way of sliding in and getting in on that at all?
I think it's hard, and we shouldn't underestimate the overwhelming authority. Let me say this. It's not even the NRA anymore. The NRA was sort of the gateway drug to this,
okay.
I think. Now I think you see, I don't think it's a mistake that so much of the gun culture in the United States is really almost fetishized. You see all these Republican, mostly vast majority, actually, I would say they're all probably Republicans, you know, who have their Christmas cards, you know, with their kids and their families arrayed around the, you know, the tree, all holding heavy weapons. You know, it's probably not surprising that there is a segment of Republican candidates and office holders who happen to be female who, you know, walk around, you know, public events with a 9mm strapped to their thigh. You know, it's a very, to me, it's a disturbing thing, but it sort of continues this idea of, I am free to do what I want to do, and I don't care if you like it or not. And I think it's, you could talk about libertarianism and, you know, freedom and all that other stuff. But you know, that's anarchy. That's not freedom. That's anarchy. And if, you know, at the point at which my freedom infringes upon your life or the life of your family or your kids or whatever, it's no longer freedom anymore. It's might makes right. I've got a gun. You know, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to use violence. And I think this is the other part to Mike, to your point about, you know, how do things get done in politics generally? The threat of violence is often, as we've seen throughout history, enough to get most people to say, you know, I hate it, but do I really want to get involved? Do I really want to get involved? Do I really want to make one of these people angry and have them come to me, right? And have them take a look at me. And this is school board members, right? This is, you know, mayors and town councilors. I mean, so the idea of this is so now, you know, it's so through the American political capillaries that it affects everybody. Whether you want to believe it or not, and I'll say this to close is, you know, if you believe that history will pass you by and politics will leave you alone, I have a lot to tell you about how human history works because it never leaves us alone.
Go ahead, Mike.
I'm sorry, ask you.
Two things. One, my apathy that came about politics and discussing politics on the show for years. Almost a decade mm-hmm. working with Mike. Offline conversations, sometimes screaming matches.
we got into it a few times. We did, yeah.
I said, look, and to Mike's credit, he never waned. I said, we are losing money. We are losing people. He said, the right people will find us. The right advertisers will find us. But we would fight about this on a regular basis. And it took Trump to get in power to change my lens and realize that I can't not lean in. And the work that the Lincoln Project has done and continues to do has educated me to realize that you have to lean in. Like you have to. We have to lean in. Otherwise, it's just going to continue happening.
You know, when I thought about this, the first reaction is, you know, F this country, F the way we did, F the, you know, just absolute,
sure,
complete rage and disgust.
Yeah, fueled by
throwing
anger.
Throwing my hands up in the air. Then I'm going to be really honest about the dark places my mind goes about this. And I'm not in any way advocating anything or anyone doing anything stupid. But if you can't get through to government leaders, if you can't move anything in the correct direction as far as gun control and keeping guns out of the hands of people that could do something like this with something as simple as a universal background check, then where do you go? And I make a statement and I also ask the question. The statement is, I think that sometimes one has to think about making it a little more uncomfortable for people to have these businesses where they sell these weapons that can, and I heard the sheriff down in Uvalde say it this morning, in seconds achieve. They were asking him, how come the officers who were on scene could not get into this room and take action to prevent this from happening? And what he said was that the nature of the weapons used in this shooting meant that we're not talking about damage that can be done in minutes. We're talking about damage that can be done in seconds. Put that in your head. If you're somebody who's apathetic about this or you're not thinking about that, imagine what he is saying. That the killing power, the stopping power, as they like to say, on an elementary school child resulted in this happening as fast as it happened. So I just think that there are, in every neighborhood, on every block, in every state, in every county in the United States, we got these places. There's a massive shrine to this crap down in Fort Myers, Florida. Big, beautiful building, two-story building called Shoot Straight. If you drive down and you're at the corner of the intersection next to it with your window rolled down, you can hear as their shooting range is in you know, full operational mode. I just think that, you know, if you can't move it with government, what do we do? I mean, and does it mean anti-gun protesters out in front of a shooting range? I don't know. That sounds to me like a recipe for disaster. But that's where my mind goes. It just wanders in situations like this. So when we get to the brick wall that is the senators and the congressmen and the people that are paid off by the gun lobby or the people that are getting a political benefit out of being pro-gun with the, you know, the 9mm strapped on their thigh, where do we go? Is there any way? Have you put any thought into, Reed, where we might be able to make some change? Because I'm right now, my hands are up in the air with frustration.
So, look, I think that, and this is a great question, because I think that oftentimes, you know, because it's, we talk to these politicians, they're not going to do anything to, regardless of party. But Mike, you talked about it again, not knowing, I'd have to think more about, and I will think more about how to do this, but the truth is that most of the time an indirect approach to this stuff is going to be more effective. For example, you know, I got a direct message on Twitter from someone last night said, why don't we have something like, if you want to drive a car, right? A 2,000-pound steel missile, you got to have insurance, right? Why wouldn't you have insurance if you owned a 9mm or an AR-15 or whatever it was, right? Like, you are responsible for that weapon, because unlike a car, which is a conveyance, it is intentionally supposed to get you from one place to the other safely, right? There's only one reason guns exist, right? It's not to get you from one place to the other. It's to take another life, whether or not that's a human or if you're a hunter, an animal, or something else, right? Like, they only have one purpose, to end human life. And so why not that? I think that, you know, like we saw with the parents of Sandy Hook, when they took the gun manufacturers to court, right? What are the ways that are going to make it less, frankly, financially tenable to do these things, to make these things okay? Because at the end of the day, Mike, I'd love to tell you that there's some more high-minded thing. Most of these folks just care about money, right? Yeah. Money and power. That's all it is. It really doesn't get more fundamental than that, or elemental than that. And so start to find ways that you are harming those. You know, are there companies who have given significant amounts of money to people who say terrible things in the wake of these shootings? Go tell a consumer brand. We did it to Toyota with giving money to bad guys, right? Consumer brands don't want to be associated with this, right? Procter & Gamble, you know, Tide, whoever it is, right? Like, they want to be family brands. They want to be large, broad-based consumer brands. If you call them out and say, why are you giving money to that guy who just said F off, you know, you're a weirdo and, you know, you're trash in the wake of a Uvalde school shooting, like, they should be taken to account for that. And so there are ways to do it. But again, it takes organization and it takes, you know, it takes coordination and it takes dedication. And here's the thing, it doesn't take a lot. Right. Most of these big companies, I've done corporate PR forever. They have thin skins. Mm. Oscar, I'm sure, can tell you from his business school, they have very thin skins. They don't want any of this. They don't want anything to do with this. It messes up sales projections. It messes up marketing. It messes up all the BS statements they put up on their website about equity and all the other stuff they just want to say but don't want to do anything about. Like, they want to be as detached from the real world of all of this as they possibly can be. And so when you bring something the C-suite has to deal with, they get really unhappy in a real hurry, not unlike calling a legislator's office.
Or a radio show, for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, or no, a radio show's boss.
Right.
Yeah. That,
right.
That might do it a little
director.
Bit. There's a theme here. I like this. We got to take another break. When we come back, I meant it's not the derogatory when I'm talking about the sideshows, but there are the sideshows. And we would, we have to talk about it. We've got some very, very interesting audio from Steve Kerr, basketball coach, about this. And I want to talk about the aggrieved parents that come on and the media and everything else. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show, ladies and gentlemen. Let me just get this squared away here. Sorry about that, Rob.
It's all right. I apologize.
Yeah, I mean, you threw me for a little. Yeah, always play promos, Rob. It's essential. I'm sorry, but I'm just trying to organize myself here. I apologize for the delay. There we go. This portion of our program is brought to you by Cornerstone. In order to calm inflation feels the fears, the feds have raised rates with the largest single jump since 2000. So, what does this mean to you? Well, you probably need a mortgage, mortgage loan in the future, divorce, pregnancy, kids move away, retirement, kids move back, parent moves in. All of these things, all of these situations, plus many more, may indicate a need for a loan. When that happens, take my advice and call my friend Mark Livingstone and his team at Cornerstone First Financial. Whether it's a purchase, whether it's a refinance, you need to work with a company that you can absolutely trust. Mark and his team will make sure you're the best prospect to a potential seller and obtain the lowest interest rate, all while giving you white glove concierge service. Call Cornerstone First Financial, voted one of the top 1% of mortgage lenders by Washingtonian Magazine and the number one choice of TMOS listeners. Call 202-625-1221. That's 202-625-1221 or cornerstonefirst.com. Thank you, Cornerstone First Financial. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the tragedy in Uvalde, Texas, with 21 people killed, two adults, 19 elementary school children. And I think I'm numb to what I used to get very angry about, guys. I used to get very frustrated and angry when I would watch the media coverage. I watched a little of John Berman on CNN earlier this morning, who did, I think, just a straight-ahead, decent job of getting the interviews and getting the story out and not being too preachy. I don't know if it does any good when you're watching these things to hear the people talk about how horrible it is and that we're here again. And it's just it feels like it's on replay. I'm listening to it on replay. Then you get outliers, and we do have the audio tape of Steve Kerr, who has been politically active for his entire coaching career, probably prior to that. But I will tell you this. Well, you have the audio if you want to set
it
up, Rob.
The thing about this that I find the most remarkable, I don't find it remarkable that he's upset and that he's, you know, he's outraged like so many people are. But he did this in a pregame press conference for a playoff game. And that surprised me, because that is when a coach should be their most focused on what's important to them, and I guess this is what's most important to him. Is a very passionate plea, and this is, again, you know, he only has a few minutes before the game, and this is what he told the press corps at the Warriors playoff game.
When are we gonna do something? I'm tired. I'm so tired of getting up here and offering condolences to devastated families that are out there. I'm so tired of the, excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm tired of the moments of silence. Enough. I ask you, Mitch McConnell, I ask all of you senators who refuse to do anything about the violence and school shootings and supermarket shootings, I ask you, are you going to put your own desire for power ahead of the lives of our children and our elderly and our churchgoers? Because that's what it looks like. There's 50 senators who refuse to vote on H.R. 8, which is a background check rule that the House passed a couple years ago. It's been sitting there for 2 years. They won't vote on it because they want to hold on to their own power. It's pathetic. I've had enough.
Reed, what you had said before about not, you know, when I mentioned the NRA, and I think I oversimplify it too when I say, oh, they just have the money, they get the money from the gun lobbies, and that's why they do. No, they do this now because the gun lobby, the NRA, and other organizations have been extremely successful in creating this narrative that, you know, freedom, America, strap on a gun, you know, you do that battle seems to me to have already been won. They've won that. And so now you actually have real voters that are out there that if you changed your tune, you know, if you're a Ted Cruz and you say, I'm going to vote for background checks, he's risking his political life that way, right?
Yeah, but is he saving other people's?
Yeah, right.
And like, isn't that what a public servant should do? You know, the thing about Kerr, first of all, I mean, I would like to say that whether or not it's Steve Kerr, you know, or Popovich in San Antonio, I mean, NBA coaches, I think, are some of America's greatest social spokespeople that we have in this country today. They are really, really terrific. They are passionate in their causes. There was just a story out down in San Antonio about Popovich, who does all this charity work that he doesn't ever tell anybody about. But also, you know, this is one thing that I just learned yesterday, was that Steve Kerr's dad was a professor in Beirut and was shot in the head twice in 1984 by Islamic gunmen. I think, you know, it wasn't homegrown terrorism. It was terrorism overseas. But I think this is something that, you know, for a guy like him, takes it very personally. And I think that he, you know, he happens, I think, also to work for a franchise, you know, that's based in San Francisco, that, you know, has a very strong feeling of what it means to speak out on issues of importance and gives him the freedom to do that. And I think that's an incredible thing. And I think he's a hell of a spokesperson for people, because I think, Mike, I think that most Americans feel similar the way we do. I don't think there's a lot of 100% guns all the time. I don't think there's a lot of take them all away either. There's plenty of people I know who are hunters, right? They lock stuff up. You know, the kids never get near it. They use them safely when they're supposed to. And there's a lot of folks who, you know, want something reasonable. I mean, and that's, you know, the Second Amendment just isn't this. But I think the one thing you asked about, you know, Ted Cruz, Mike, is this. Somebody should ask him the question, Ted Cruz, is the blood of children the sacrifice we make for your belief in the Second Amendment? Mm. Is that how you see it? Because that's the answer. Whether or not he says it or not, that's the answer.
Yeah. I think that the lack of willingness to even put a toe in the water for these policy changes. You know? I mean, you try. If something doesn't work, you try it. You give it a try. You know, where did that happen? It happened a long time ago. You might say it's been since the dawn of American history that we've always been rigid in our belief systems and we don't change. I think that I 100% agree with you about the Steve Kerrs of this world, that those are the kind of voices that come from a place that they're not expected, and they are and it makes them infinitely more powerful. When you hear a guy like that speak out. And when I talk about the sideshows with the media, I'd love to see more of that in some way. That seems to me to be, you know, when we talk about the major news outlets, it just seems to be from the local level all the way up to the national news, just, you know, rinse, repeat. It's the same thing. And I don't know what I would propose and what you would do or, you know, but media is to a certain extent essential to getting messages into people's hearts and getting the word out.
May I just say this before Oscar, I mean, not to stay on basketball, although I am a huge NBA fan in the playoffs. I can
attest to this.
I don't have the attention for it otherwise.
When I visited Reed at his home, thank you for letting me breach the perimeter.
Right.
All he did, because he was making me tense when he was standing over me.
I learned it by watching Mike, okay?
Yes, and I do that too.
I learned it by watching you.
All he did, he was watching NBA basketball. I could hear it in the background. I was like, you do that, I'll do this.
Awesome.
But last night, before the, you know, after Coach Kerr made his remarks and before the game tipped off, I mean, it was Shaq, Ernie Griffin, Kenny Smith, and Charles Barkley. They had to do it during, you know, the NCAAs as well.
Yeah.
Right. You know, this is, I mean, the idea that these four guys, first of all, they're entertaining as heck, but they're the best. Up there and they are the conscience of a country. And Mike, to your point, they are guys who can speak to guys in a way that makes them understand and gets them to listen because they're not politicians. Right, because they are heroes of ours in a setting other than politics or whatever the case might be. And I think that what they do, aside from how they look at the games and everything else, is a true service to us.
I agree. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, outside of the discussion we're having, simply on entertainment value, I am not a basketball fan. I watch lengthy clips regularly of the TNT basketball analysis show with just to watch the dynamic between Shaq and Sir Charles.
I would watch them read the phone book to each other.
they're treasures. They need a wider audience. Wider sports audience. So I hope that happens. We have to take another break. We're going to dive in. I'm going to do my best not to be repetitive when I get to, but I did set this thread up to have people make some comments and some suggestions, and we can just have kind of a give and take on that. We'll do that with your Facebook messages to me on the thread if you didn't get one in. But what the hell? You were asleep at the wheel. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show. Our portion of the show today is being brought to you by Legacy Box. Are your family's memories trapped on old unwatchable camcorder tapes or film reels? Legacy Box is the solution. Legacy Box is the super simple mail-in service, and if you've got it, they can digitize it. Legacy Box can digitize 19 different types of media. I don't even know what 19 different types of media
are. Well, one of them is cassette tapes.
Thank you, Rob.
Videotapes?
Yeah, well, film.
That's two. Let's move on.
Oh, film. Mike.
What?
Photographs.
Microfiche.
Yes.
Thank you. From VHS tapes to Super 8 film, preserve all of your treasured moments. Each item is hand-digitized by a team of over 200 trained technicians right here in the good old USA. And each kit includes everything you need to safely pack and send your recorded moments, including safety stickers for every item. Plus, their exclusive barcoded online tracking system provides up to 12 emailed updates along the way. We've all used it. I converted actual film from the 1950s. It looks amazing. Oscar and Rob converted their videotapes before they disintegrated, and now they're safe forever.
Yes.
Get started future-proofing your memories today so you can gather the family and begin the trip down memory lane. Go to legacybox.com/TMOS to get an incredible 40% off your first order. Buy today to take advantage of this exclusive offer. Then send it in when you're ready. Go to legacybox.com/TMOS and save 40% while supplies last. We are here on a very, very difficult show to do for me because we've got another one of these shootings, this time in Uvalde, Texas, with 22 human beings murdered, 19 of them children. It's difficult to fathom, but we know how to fathom it because we have been there before. And I asked people online about 7 hours ago. I said I'd like you to get on and talk. And so I'm just going to read a few comments here. Cheryl writes me that we need to somehow change how our culture views guns. They are glamorized and Reed had mentioned fetishized in popular culture. There's a huge portion of society that views unlimited gun ownership as their birthright, which just isn't true. No right under the Constitution is absolute. Is any right really?
But
even
doesn't
a
that
right,
sort of go back it? To these days of mass shooting? I mean, cowboys and Indians, you know, westerns were fetishizing
our
the
whole
gun
culture.
Yeah, I mean,
go turn on the TV tonight. I mean, it is part of our culture,
and not just television and movies. In books, going back, you know, to the 1800s, that was what they wrote about. So it's hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, when you really think about it, and you think about an evolved society, long after all of us in this room are worm food, do you think there may be an evolution? Just imagine, I always like to think in terms, it's a weird thought I get. I get weird thoughts because of all the years of drinking that I've done. But I have to
you
say
you should
that,
quit.
Like, I don't have to. Thank you. Thank you, Reed.
Thank you, Reed.
An alien comes down to this country and says, well, what do you do for fun? Well, we're going to a movie where it's about people killing each other.
Yeah.
It's just the human condition. Like, it's been part of our entertainment and it's kind of the American way,
you know,
the cowboy way. That is that. I don't think there's no way that changes. But You know, I mean, would it be, but could a Hollywood producer make a sexy movie about, you know,
do violent video rambling. Games create this? I mean, I don't know if I, like, I get the,
if they do, I'm, you know, creating a killer in the room next door, probably as we speak right now.
I'm not going to, I mean, this is not the forum for that. I don't know if that's the byproduct.
Yeah. I mean, in Minecraft, you're equally as likely to build a digital pig. So, I mean, I don't think there's any, I don't know that
he's playing Fortnite now.
No, but, that's a little different.
I think the other part too, though, is that, you know, in a movie, you don't, you know, you see, you know, they've gotten more advanced in how, you know, brains splatter or whatever.
Right.
But it's still a relatively speaking sanitized version of it. To Oscar's earlier point, why did they have to DNA test these parents and kids? Because the kid didn't have a head anymore, right? The head was gone. The head of that child was a cantaloupe, and it exploded. Now, at the end of World War II, Dwight Eisenhower made the Germans who lived next door to concentration camps march through them and see what was going on so that they couldn't, because they knew that was going on. They weren't going to let them get away with it. They made them dig ditches and bury bodies and all that. Like Greg Abbott, Ted Cruz, Dan Paxton, all these other people, they should have been forced to go into that classroom and see the carnage with their own eyes. Look at it. Look at those kids that are, as Oscar said, in pieces, right? In unintelligible pieces, right? Based on what one guy was able to do with one weapon in however many minutes, right? And that's the thing. If you're not faced with the reality of it, right? Like we can feel sadness, right? We can feel this incredible pain for these folks. But the horror that these parents like are going to have to go identify their children who are unidentifiable, right? Is something that we can't possibly imagine. And if these guys want to be so cool, right, then join the army, right? Go kill bad guys. Mm. You know, go join the Ukrainians. Kill as many Russians as you want to. See it up close, right? But they don't want to do that. A lot of these guys are keyboard cowboys, right? Yeah. They're people who, you know, their only way to feeling any sort of power in their lives, Mike, is by buying a gun, wearing a Hawaiian shirt, and strapping it on a street corner because it makes them feel powerful because they know people are afraid.
Yeah.
And when you talk about having people witness this, this is another one of the extreme, I don't even think it's extreme, the ideas that I think about. You know, there is documentary evidence of that horror you were just describing. And I don't know. We're a visual society, you know.
Yeah.
If it's on camera, if it's on screen, you know, this gets back to the media that we were discussing earlier. When you couldn't do it, but if you showed it, you would just see what it's really all about. And you know, we're so protective of certain things. Well, in
Bolivia,
country.
They showed someone dying of COVID to show people what's what, that it was real.
Mm. Well, would you go that far as to? You know, show the aftermath of something like this?
If you have the power to make or break policy and change, you should be exposed to both sides. And I'm talking about, if I can just be, you know, somewhat look through a lens of say, okay, you can see how people are protected by it, but you should be able to see how people are destroyed by it.
You know, one of the comments I got here was mental health. Just two words. That's all it was. That seems to be the counter to anything to do with guns. Am I right about that, Reed? That seems to be the main argument with where people, you know, you had Abbott at his press conference emphasizing mental health. There was nothing about guns or gun control.
Well,
or
because
anything
again,
to
because
do that.
Yeah, because then it gives them an off ramp, right? This gentleman. It's sort of the catch-22, Mike, right? If you weren't crazy, you wouldn't do this. And if you did it, by definition, you must be crazy. But then you could look back at the guy in Buffalo a week ago, wrote a manifesto about how he hated black people and Jews and, like, you know, white replacement theory was coming for us. And he'd be goddamned, pardon my French, you know, if he was going to stand for it. I mean, it goes back to Charles Manson. Like, Helter Skelter was a race war.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this stuff is not new. It's not new to any of us. It's not new to any of us who's been paying attention. And so I think that, you know, mental illness is a huge problem in this country. There's no question about it. But the answer to, you know, okay, well, are you going to provide more psychological care? Going to provide more psychiatric medicine? You know, are you going to make that a key component of health insurance? Are you going to make sure that guys and men and women in county jail or prisons who are probably there for mental and psychological issues, psychiatric issues, are being dealt with by mental health professionals instead of jail guards? Like, what are you going to do? Right. And once you start asking those questions, Mike, they don't have answers.
No.
Because there are answers. They just don't want to answer them because it's
he was a crazy maniac. Doesn't matter that he had a gun. Anybody could have gotten a gun. Blah blah blah. Goes on and on and on. Same argument.
But there's a difference. There's a difference between you know this Ramos kid, you know, going to whatever town if or whatever street it would have been in Uvalde and buying it illegally, right? And being able to go to a federally, you know, sanctioned store and doing it in 10 minutes. Like
there's a level of.
You know, you have to cross a barrier. You have to cross a threshold. And that's what, and if it's a background check, right? Or as somebody asked, I was on the phone with said today, if you do a, you know, if you, and Oscar knows about these things better than I do. If you did a cross check on someone's 18th birthday, the fact that they're buying a weapon, they're buying body armor, and you start to create an algorithm that puts all those things together that goes, wait, Mr. Ramos, I think we just need you to come back in like 10 days.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's not unreasonable. Nobody needs an assault rifle right now, right? Like nobody needs it this second.
I have a question. I heard this notion and I'd like you all to comment on
then
it.
Then we have to take a break after that.
Okay. Right? It's pretty quick. You mentioned Fred Gutenberg and I heard him on a podcast and he said that a lot of the stuff we do now is going to be the cow's already left the barn because there are 300 million people in America and 400 million guns in America. So even if you were to do extensive background checks or alter the way guns are acquired, that still leaves 400 million guns in the United States. So what he was advocating was background checks for ammunition. And to me, this makes good sense because this maniac that acted yesterday, you said he bought like
300 plus rounds.
Yeah, twice.
350 rounds.
Yeah, and so, I mean, if that doesn't raise a red flag or at least want to check into it. I think the key, I mean, you talked, Mike, about thinking outside of the box. Maybe that's something to
that. I don't think that's that far out of the box. I think ammunition's part of it. Dan, our friend Dan, that we know, writes, vote for competent, compassionate leadership, universal background checks. Check. I'm with him on that.
Yeah.
Mandatory safety courses. Nothing wrong with that at all. Mandatory insurance coverage. Reed had mentioned insurance
before. I like that.
Military-grade weapons, ammunition, and gear need to be restricted to active military personnel. I'm giving that one, Dan, for you, a little dingy-wingy, because that is absolutely true. We will continue. We're trying to get this in, and we do, I apologize, have to pay our bills. So we have to give another commercial here, and then we'll come back with a few more thoughts on this. You're listening to The Mike O'Mara Show. This portion of our program is brought to you by Solo Stove. There's nothing like gathering around a warm fire on a cool evening, although we don't have cool evenings down here in Florida, but I'm sure where you are.
It's cool again here in Washington, D.C. Perfect night last night for the Solo Stove.
Not here. A smokeless fire pit is what I'm talking about. Enough about me, all right? Solo Stove.
Can't you just make s'mores by holding up a marshmallow at your house?
Sure. Yeah, I can put it on my car. A smokeless fire pit from Solo Stove makes your outdoor moments even more memorable. Spend some time with family and friends and build lasting memories around a Solo Stove fire pit. I have one. They're wonderful. It's the best. Instead of having to constantly dodge campfire fumes, you sit back, relax, and actually enjoy the far. And right now, you can get a great deal on a Solo Stove fire pit. They are brilliantly engineered, made with premium-grade 304 stainless steel and a 360-degree airflow system that maximizes efficiency while minimizing smoke. It's so easy to light with just a few bits of starter. Your fire is blazing in minutes. It's perfectly portable. Take Solo Stove with you on camping trips and more. We all have them. We all love them. Solo Stove is the best. Shop now and get up to 30% off fire pits all month long and use promo code TMOS at checkout to get an extra $20 off, plus a lifetime warranty and free 30-day returns. Just go to solostove.com and remember, you get $20 off when you use promo code TMOS. I sure like the idea of military grade weapons and that, you know, what sucks about this is I start talking about it and it's never going to happen. It's just so damn logical.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
It really is. You know, and you talk about a great example would be, well, it's in case we have to defend ourselves against an invading army or our own government decides and we need to rally the troops like the well-organized militia. But the reality of it, I think, weren't there examples most recently in Ukraine where there were distribution centers in the country of Ukraine where the citizenry that was staying in the country, the brave men that stayed behind, would choose to go to locations if they weren't gun owners. You have that type of situation that's offered as well. It's just...
And I think you'd also get into the weeds of, even if we got to the step of considering that, I don't want to be a part of the organization that has to determine what's exactly military grade. Is that? Is it not? You know, I think there's going to be a lot of probably they'll drag their feet on that issue as well.
You know, you talked about, Reed, algorithms where you could put together a profile of an individual that, you know, would say, oh, hold on just a second. No, not for you. And how many times are there bureaucratic snafus because a couple of factors overlap? And it's, I'm sorry, you were flagged on this particular situation. The technology exists for this. So much common sense stuff. I wonder. I don't know.
The other part too is that we've, you know, if for, you know, let's stay in Texas where I went to high school and college. There was an old tweet of Greg Abbott's, who's the governor there, he's running for his third term against Beto O'Rourke right now. And it was, I think, 2015. And it said, Texas, I'm disappointed in you. We're now number two in gun sales behind California. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are fundamentally unserious people. You know, he said at his press conference today, Mike, you know, never again. Okay. Right. Because it happened 3 years ago or 4 years ago. Right. In another town in Texas. This is the same guy who said, you know, if he got reelected or after he passed, some bill that, like, after he got reelected, he'd make sure that rape never happened again. Right. After the power grid down there failed, said it would never happen again. It's like, this is Mr. Never Happen Again. Mm-hmm. Like, they're fundamentally unserious, and they're passing these laws called constitutional carry, which basically means you have no training whatsoever, and you can go and basically carry a six shooter on your hip in public when you used to have to get training for concealed carry or things like that, where you had to have at least some training to be able to do that legally. Now, in a lot of states, I know in Texas and Georgia in particular, and I think it's going to go through any minute now in the legislature there in Florida, Mike, you can just basically buy a gun and carry it around with you. You know, and you've seen some of these silly pictures of guys in 7-Elevens with like 9 guns strapped to them or whatever. But they're actually going in the opposite direction because, you know, the genie on the guns and gun legislation, gun policy has gotten out of the box. Right now it's the voters, you know, many of whom Trump drew into the political sphere are now demanding this sort of action. And so they're following their voters as opposed to being leaders.
You've been up close and personal to this. How much cynicism is there when you talk about unserious? Is there a cynicism? I just can picture Ted Cruz saying, we'll get by this, Johnny. This is just a momentary blip on the radar. We'll get by this. That's the way I feel.
Yeah, the cynicism is shocking. It shouldn't be, but it is. And I would say this, the wealthier the background you came from and the fancier school you went to, the more cynical the politician, whether or not it's Ted Cruz or, you know, Elise Stefanik up in New York, right? All these people, they all went to Ivy League schools. Ron DeSantis, your governor, Ivy League schools, very well educated. The sin is like Marjorie Taylor Greene is a true nut. Like, she's a true believer, dyed in the wool, bathed in the blood of crazy. These other people see it as a path to power, right? Like, that's the only reason they do it. They hate these people. If they thought that they could get rid of them and be successful and powerful, they wouldn't a heartbeat.
Listener Brian writes me, instead of a march on Washington, I'd like a national day of marching on every member of Congress, their local office. Let them see how their constituents feel. As they say, all politics is local. If they hate getting phone calls at their office, I would imagine a march on their local office that's going to splash all over the local news would be, you know, something to move it. But you think the phone calls are more important, right?
Well, no, look, I think any sort of, you know, direct public proactive action is important. I think that if, you know, the one thing I will say, though, because so much of the context of the conversation we're having is violence, is that you're going to go be nonviolent. Right. Do not threaten. Do not break things. Right. You go in and you say, I am a constituent of Congressman so and so or Senator so and so. And like, I am here to lodge my complaint about this. Will anything change? I don't know. I wouldn't count on it. But there is worth in the effort and the act. And I think that, you know, this is the other thing, too, Mike, that you see that goes into the cynicism, which is, it'll never happen again on my watch. And let's not politicize this. Right. That's or it's mental health. So those are the three off ramps they usually.
Yeah.
Use.
But you're saying politicize the hell out of it. Please do
any sort of direct contact with your congressman. I will say, though, from experience, don't send an edible arrangement. It doesn't work.
This guy.
You're trying to be an influencer. You just didn't know how to do it. This comes from
actually,
Wanda.
I would say this. There are probably more members of Congress for whom an edible arrangement would be appreciative than anything else.
Pineapple. Anyway, Wanda writes, every school should have at least two SROs. That's the safety officers that are there. I drop my kid off every morning down here in Florida. I don't know what it's like in the rest of the country because I don't have any experience with it, but we've got a uniformed officer, armed officer, that's right there on the street when we drop our kid off. The officers are there all day long. I know that some people say that's the be-all end-all solution. It's not, but it sure makes me feel better.
My brother-in-law is one of them. Retired from the Loudoun Sheriff Department. He took a job with Loudoun County as an SRO.
These are regular officers that we have down here in Florida. Age limit should be 21 to purchase a gun. Yes, I agree with that. And it should only be a Barney Fife gun. Yeah,
a six-shooter.
Little handgun. That's a six-shooter.
With one bullet in his pocket.
Let's see. Daniel writes, raise the legal age for all firearms to 21. A lot of that we got through this. You know, and the question that Karen asks is, why are they sitting on a background check rule instead of voting it in? Well, they're doing that because they're worried about their political asses. That's it. That's where we are with that. Let's see here. Change legal age from 18 to 25. I've heard that as well.
Yeah.
I was talking with a Trump supporting individual that I know who said change it to 25. You know, because you have if you break out the demographics of these shootings, a lot of these are older teenagers that do this. And who knows?
You can't rent a car until you're 25.
That's when your car insurance goes down.
Right.
Amen.
Yeah.
Educate people on the relaxed gun laws that we have now. Relaxed, I guess. Most people don't realize how easy it is. Yeah, people are not educated on this. Spend money on the schools to improve security. We're there with all the same arguments. So we're out of time, too, and we need to wrap this up. I'll give everybody 15, 20 seconds. Rob, your final thoughts on this day that we've
just
had here?
Real quick, is that right now you're hearing, it seems to be an undercurrent of the fact that people are dissatisfied with the job that Joe Biden is doing. I'm personally happy that it's just not the other guy, but I know if he could flex any political muscle and the friendship that he has to get something done, and I don't want to be opportunistic like you said earlier, Mike, but this is his chance to build a lasting legacy.
Yeah.
And if he applied himself,
easier said than done, Rob.
I know, but I mean, it just seems like if there is a time that could be done, this might be it. So that's my thought.
Oscar, what do you have?
Dig in with your phone calls, dig in with your donations, to the right candidates, to the right super PACs. Do something. If you feel the pain we feel, do something.
Reed, final thoughts on and thank you so much for joining us for the whole time.
I just want to say thank you to y'all. I know, Mike, that you said it earlier, but I will say, as someone who has been listening to you since I was in the fifth grade, I think that what you all do on a daily basis is a tonic to many of our souls. So I just want to say thank y'all.
Thank you, and I'll leave you with this, just a message of resolve. Keep fighting, keep paying attention, keep caring, keep voting. That's it. That's all. I want to thank Reed Galen from the Lincoln Project. Please check them out as well. You can find all the information on that. LincolnProject.us. We appreciate his participation. I will, you know, say right now our thoughts are with all those people in Uvalde, Texas, and those babies. A very, very sad day in America. Maybe something can come out of it. I hope it can. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode. For Rob Spiewak and Oscar Santana, Mike O'Mara saying so long, everybody.
Goodbye.
Ciao, ciao.
Want more? Make sure you check out the Mike O'Mara Bonus Show. Get it at MikeOMaraShow.com.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.